Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
This is All Things Elite. Welcome back to All Things Elite. Load up the pod, man, it's on when we speak. Rich right here, let me warm it up for Austin and Floyd. Couldn't be no one but the boys. When it come to All Things Elite from the fan perspective, swear, man, it ain't no question. Hear from them first. Swear, man, they putting in the work. No, they had to get me for the verse. Social Suplex Network Zone. I was at a time in your headphones. Austin and Floyd on the microphone. Backing out on a rant, getting in the zone. Pulling up the show, give it 7 stars, you already know. Who else could it be but the show with the proclivity for a positivity? I'm gone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 267th episode of Social Suplex's podcast about AEW with a proclivity for positivity. Welcome to All Things Elite. My name is Austin Sumwitz. I am the host of this lovely show. Joining with me, as always, is my good buddy and friend, Mr. Floyd Johnson Jr. My man, how are you doing?
Happy day after Valentine's Day to you, sir.
Same to you.
We're officially recording in the wee hours of February 15th. I am doing good. I can't say good. No sports fan can be doing good roughly 5 days, or, you know, 5 days after your team got a mud hole stomped in them.
About
the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, and then the parade happened today. I, for my mental health, my sports fan mental health, went on my Twitter account and muted Philadelphia Eagles, Barkley, and all those stuff for a month. It's not forever. I'm not that petty. We got curb stomped. We got curb stomped, and then they picked us up, and then they hit us with a GTS, and then they picked us up, hit us with a F5, and then we got 3 crossroads. And that was like in the first 5 minutes of the match. It wasn't close. And it's funny. It's like people are like, oh, man, your team got their ass whooped. I'm like, in the preference of losing close and getting your ass whooped, I prefer getting my ass whooped.
Right. No, absolutely.
Because right now, I am not sitting here wondering what we could have done different. You know? Mm-hmm. There's no regrets or anything like that. Philadelphia was the better team, and they played better, and they played the better team. They were already the better team. They had their best day on literally our worst day of the season. And, yeah, this happens. We're not the first team to get blown out in the Super Bowl. Actually, it's not even the first time the Chiefs got blown out in the Super Bowl. So, you know, we will be passed, but I've always been more of a big picture sports fan. I think living year to year on whether your team wins the Super Bowl or not is your only sign of success makes for a very depressing sports life. Honestly, I don't know how you enjoy life with that attitude. I've always looked at season success based on that season. As bad as our offensive line, our offensive tackle was this year, as far as the offensive tackle position, it's a very important position on the team. And honestly, our secondary wasn't great. Our offense wasn't great, right? We lost 3 total games. We only lost 2 games where our starters started. And that game to Buffalo, which then we beat them later, and then this Philly game. Those are the only 2 games I saw lost this season. And I'm just like, hey, you know, I'm not going to name team fans because I don't want to go after them. But there's a lot of franchises that would pray to be in the Chiefs position right now. So I can't let that one really, really, really bad game ruin what this franchise has done over the last six, and honestly, for the better part, the last 9 years, because we won our division for the last 9 years. We played in the conference championship six straight years. We've been to the Super Bowl five times. This is what you pay the president and your GM and all of them to do. They've done. So I'm not going to take this one loss and be like, yep, let's change everything. It's like, okay, it showed us where we were weak, and it shows what we needed to work on. I mean, we may be able to address everything in the offseason.
But well, let's be frank. You're more so just being like, you know, like, oh, no, we didn't win three straight Super Bowls. Correct. Like, you put it into that perspective, and, like, I think you're fine.
Yeah, one team was better than us over the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. One team was better than us when it mattered. Again, it's funny. I went and looked at my post, and I was like, oh, I was naming all these teams that could get it. You know a team I didn't name? Didn't name Philly. Not saying I thought we were going to lose, because I didn't at this point in time. I tell anybody, I was like, I wasn't going to think we could lose until we lost. We hadn't won that many games in a row, that many close games in a row, that many games where I thought the other team might have had more talent. We'd still won. And yeah, we ran into the buzzsaw. So congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles. Ha 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 to the Dallas Cowboys and the Giants. Hey, so if you look at what the successful seasons are, both the Eagles had a successful season and the Commanders had a successful season. Right. If you're a Commanders fan and you see your season anything acceptable from where you successful from where you were last year, I am like, I feel bad for you. Because guess what? You're going to enjoy very little football in life with the standard that if your team doesn't win the Super Bowl, it's not a good season.
Mm-hmm. And shout out Kendrick Lamar. That's all I'll say. Shout out Kendrick fucking Lamar.
All right, and here's my hot take on it.
You don't like it, I bet.
No, this is no personal towards Kendrick Lamar. Or Dr. Dre or Rihanna or anyone else that was a foreign. I've had to sit through fucking The Who or whatever. I hate the Super Bowl halftime show basically being a concert. I don't know if anybody's ever went to basketball games. Give me Red motherfucking Panda and let's go. If you've never heard of it, look it up. Red Panda. She is absolutely uncontroversial as a performance. Yes. And
I know what you're talking about.
Yes, and amazing. And then we can move on. Because, good Lord, let me tell you, when my team was down 24-0, you could tell.
That was the last thing you wanted to hear.
I didn't care about I don't care about who performs the concert during the stopgap in the game. What? Shut the fuck up. My team lost. I'm like, hey, Kendrick Lamar danced on Drake's grave, okay? That's what he did. Yes. He did it in front of the largest audience in Super Bowl halftime history. Uh-huh. And I'm like, and you know what? Drake is still like a gazillionaire. So is there really a loser in this?
I mean, not really. He just dropped a brand new collab album with Party Next Door just today. So
yeah, that's going to probably do like a billion streams, and he's going to make so much money. And it's like, yes, there was a battle. Kendrick Lamar was able to dig up more dirt and say that dirt more eloquently on Drake than Drake was saying on Kendrick Lamar. In essence, that's what a rap battle is.
Correct.
Yes. So it's just like, So if Kendrick Lamar had punched old women in the face and Drake made a song about that, Drake would have won. But hey, Drake had done more dirt than Kendrick Lamar. That's pretty much what happened here.
I think that's basically it for everything outside of that. So
but it was in general my life. I will tell everybody, it's good. I am very happy in general But, yeah, I got kicked in the teeth as far as a sports fan.
Just a little bit. But yeah. You know what? I think you'll get back up on your feet. Just saying. We got a lot to get into, obviously, this week with AEW. Grand Slam Australia is this Saturday, is when you guys are hearing this. It is tonight, obviously.
Probably.
The time differences and everything. It's, like Floyd said, about to say, yeah, it's happening right now, basically.
Yeah, because I just saw pictures from the meet and greet. And so the meet and greet is pre-show. Sam said he, Sir Sam Brown, he does the AEW match guide. He is landed in Brisbane like 3 or 4 hours ago. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure the show is happening or whatever right now. Of course, I am going to be spoiler free. So I'm outside of Twitter and all that stuff until after the show is over.
Yeah. So we're going to get into everything from AEW from this week leading into Grand Slam Australia, obviously. Before we get into the show, guys, we appreciate the support that you give us. So if you could give us a share with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish, and download this fine show, whether it's on YouTube Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, doesn't matter. Rate, review, subscribe, helps the show out. And then follow us on social media. You can follow us on Twitter and at Blue Sky at AT Elite Pod. You can also follow at Social Suplex. They make this show possible, and you can check out all the other shows they have on their network. You will not be disappointed. And I am at Austin Sumowitz, S-Z-U-M-O-W-I-C-Z. And Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter.
I want to add, give us money. Buy our merch.
Yes.
It is 2025. You know how much food costs. And Austin still needs the date. Okay, let's go.
Yes, I can't afford to go on Valentine's Day dates because people don't buy enough shirts. That's my excuse.
There you go. There you go. I'm like, dude, like, I mean, with this economy, what a dinner at McDonald's is like $150. So if you want to take her anywhere, we need y'all to buy shirts and give us money. There you go.
There you go. Exactly. We're going to touch a little bit on Collision real quick. Obviously, the promo that Moxley cut on Adam Copeland was pretty solid, I will say. The three-way trios match to open up the show between the Undisputed Kingdom,
I feel
Daniel
like
Garcia, like 2.0, like and Shane Taylor Promotions, dude.
I feel like you're burying the lead here.
Yeah,
about a guest star on this AEW Collision Houston in February 8th. Me, your boy Floyd Johnson.
Oh, yeah, you literally, yes.
Yeah, I was first row.
I wanted to save it for Floyd because, like, literally the show starts and you see Floyd's giant mug right on screen.
With my wife left of me looking like a hostage, you know, my wife, I tell her, I was like, you have the resting, I don't want to be here face.
I was going to say, yeah.
No, like her, like, I have taken her places. She wanted to go. Like, she is like, I've always wanted to come here, and I've taken her. And she still has that same face. That's what she does. And I was like, man, I'm going to get arrested because someone's going to think you're a hostage. Because, your face just says, man, I'd rather be anywhere else but there. And it's just like, it doesn't matter where it is. Thunder Games, they're all in. It's like, yeah, like, so, because she was like, right before that, we walk in, we talk to Sam,
Shout out.
Shout out Sam Security. So, you know, it's not Sam from Australia, Sam Security.
No.
Both Sams are actually in the same place right now, which is cool. And then, because I think this is Australia Sam. This is his first show because, you know, he lives in Australia. And then, in the back, Will Hobbs is just standing there, and we both wave, and she waves back, and she's happy. She has a happy look on her face. I'm happy. Go get us some drinks. And, yeah, and then the thing starts, and they start in her face, and then I watch it back later, and I'm like, oh, dang, you got resting out of you got resting kidnap face. Okay. So, no, that was very exciting to be there. Now, I do want to point out something. I try to stay super excited and everything, but it was February in Houston, right? So everywhere else in the country, it is cold as fuck, right?
Yes.
But in Houston, it was 80 degrees. And because it was 80 degrees in February, I think their, like, thermostat or something is run, like, automatically based on the season, right? Mm-hmm. So it had on their winter thermostat, but it was 80 degrees outside. So it was very hot in this room. So I was super house of fire at the beginning, but this big old body started wearing down towards the end.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because it was hot. It was hot.
I feel that.
Now, just the quick stuff about the show, everything you said, Mox comes out, like, at that initial, like, what? And we start looking around because it's still cool. Because they come out that general section, but sometimes they throw it up just depending on the security and how the building's laid out. But they came out mm-hmm. the same place. And he, you know, called out everybody and said he's not leaving. And that was good shit. That was good shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. But obviously after Floyd opened up the show, yes, I did bury the lead on that because I wanted him to cut me off on that. The trios match, though. Y'all got a fucking banger of an opening with that trios match, man. Shane Taylor Promotions 2.0, Undisputed Kingdom, rocked the fucking house, man. They did a damn good job.
Yeah, dude, this was just a continuation of a hot streak of AEW. I definitely, about 2-3 weeks ago, I came on here and yeah, I was not in the most positive place when it came to AEW television.
Yeah.
And then
I was with you on that.
Yeah. And then after that, literally starting with that show, I was like, there was incremental changes. And then they put on banger after banger after banger after banger. Now, when I say banger, it's varying degrees of banger. Some people might be like, well, it's better than what it was, but I didn't think it was great. And if you're there, that's fine. And then there's some people like, yeah, it's been really good. You know, a lot of people are trying to be conservative because we've had streaks of good shows, but long term, they might not pan out the way we wanted to. So people right. are kind of cautiously optimistic. To that, I say, fuck it. I'm first to say AEW's back, bitch. They are back. Banger after banger. Nothing but good shows. The last four shows, there's no way. To me, this Grand Slam show is going to be bad. They've set up the next week's shows going to Revolution to be good. Yeah, AEW, they've got their finger back on the pulse. They're focusing on the right things. They've lessened focus on other things. The young people are fighting. They're starting to get rid of the olds. We're back.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you, too, honestly. It feels like we're starting to get into this good stretch. And like I said, leading into it happening yeah. around yeah. Grand Slam
yeah.
definitely has me incredibly excited for that very reason.
Yeah, I want to be Will Smith to Tony Collins Martin and in Bad Boys. And I'm like, I'm Mike Lowry, and I'm yelling at him. That's how you book. That's mm-hmm. how you book right there. Mm-hmm. That's how you
for real.
When you book, this is how you book from now on. Because there right. has not been a lot of complicated changes. It's just been like, okay, stuff other people weren't into, they've focused on less. Like the Jeff Jarrett MJF thing. The Death yes. Riders thing has been presented a lot better over the last few weeks. And, you know, and that just made it better. And then they're starting to emphasize things like Harley Cameron. Like,
yes.
You know, this new tag team division with the Hurt Syndicate as the leaders. And getting all sorts of challengers. It's like, oh, Daniel Garcia remembered he's the TNT champion. He's looking for contenders. Oh, Okada remembers he's the Continental champion. He's looking for contenders. Then you just give us four of the best wrestlers in the world in a tag team match. Yeah, yeah, we're back. AEW's back to doing what they do best. And it's like I have jokingly off this taken some took them some credit because they seem to be pushing everything that I've said, but a lot of that stuff I just thought was common sense. I don't think I was like, you know, reinventing the booking wheel to say, hey, you should focus on the things people want to watch and then not focus on the things that obviously aren't getting reactions.
Yeah. No, honestly, I feel like we're kind of now just in this nice little spot. So, the trios match was by far, I felt like, the best match of the show.
Yes.
Overall.
But my favorite thing was Harley. Harley yes, segment.
Halftime motherfucking Harley. And Harley.
According to the ratings, there was a spike when she was on.
Correct, as it should. Like, I'm telling you, man, and I'm going to talk about it more when we get into Dynamite 2, dude. She is everything right now, man. And it's like, I always love it when people I support, like, get the support back that I feel they deserve. And, dude, I've been so happy to see just the growth of Harley. It's been amazing. She has Puppet Mercedes. She gets ready to sing the Money Train song. And then Mercedes interrupts her. Are you stupid or are you dumb? Which, love that. And then she gets ready to call her a loser, to which she immediately cuts her off and calls and says, I'm a legend. And she gets ready to sing again. And she does. But eventually she goes and, you know, Mercedes continues to call her a loser, says basically that little puppet could probably wrestle better than you, to which she goes and says, you know what? Fine. You know what? I am new to this. But she still said that she's fought so hard to be here and she's not stopping, and then finally is able to convince her to fight her in Australia for the TBS title, because she said, your whole career, the most entertaining you've been is when I've had my hand up your puppet ass. And then she starts singing Feel the Wrath, but then she gets slapped and then hits Mercedes with a microphone. And then she finally accepts the challenge for the TBS championship, which the crowd is so fucking hyped that it's happening.
Yes, I was dancing. I was singing. I was Monet grinding. Yeah, no, this was a very, very fun segment. Texas crowd, shout out Houston.
Oh, shout out, dude.
Shout out Austin, on fire. I you know, I'm one of those people that have learned, don't book a city more, because, you know, it's usually diminishing returns if you book them more. But, dude, if every crowd could be like that Houston crowd and like that Austin crowd, dude, AEW would be just as hot as it was before. Yeah, but I always say, just bring, you know, when you go to shows, bring the energy. And I did not have to say that to Houston and Austin.
Yes, it was not an issue in the slightest with that. And then in terms of other stuff that happened on Collision, fucking Toro the mascot was there with Thunder Rosa, which was fun to see. They have the Houston Texans mascot, so that was a little bit of a surprise. I mean, he's fought with Thunder Rosa multiple times at Houston Texan games, too. So it's funny that she actually brought him out.
Yes, and we got a close-up of his butt when he was sitting on the guardrail at the early part of the match. He was literally right in Crystal's face.
Yes.
Like, and Crystal was staring at his butt. It was hilarious.
That's great.
All right, now he was next to me, and we high-fived. It was good. Had a good time because, you know, I'm a Chiefs fan, and you know how the Houston Texans got out of the playoffs. Yeah. So I was like, yeah!
For
this, this was pre-Super Bowl, so I still had I still had my smile.
Yeah, it was still there for right now. But we then had a quick little exhibition match for Mariah May. She quickly gets the win over a jobber. She then gets her little bag and then dresses up her opponent to look like Toni Storm and smears lipstick all over her face. Then Luther's back, making his official TV debut, even though I saw him on the cruise. So he'd already made his return where we were. He had a tray with a bloody shoe on it. Mariah then spits at Luther. As she goes back to go after her opponent, Timeless Toni Storm has legitimately taken her place and traded places with the jobber, and she stares at her with death in her eyes and headbutts her, but then Mariah is able to quickly get out of the way and get through the crowd before Toni can keep beating her up. And man, dude, I mean, that to me, dude, the women have some of the most anticipated matches, I feel like, for Grand Slam, and it's not even close.
Dude, yes, they do. This Harley Mercedes thing has been built perfectly. And Toni Storm and Mariah May is over a year in the making. They are the best built stories for their time. So absolutely.
Yeah, it's incredibly awesome to see it. It's really, I'm very happy to see it happen, and it's well deserved. And then the main event between Mark Briscoe and Protostar Kyle Fletcher was very entertaining. Shout out to Kyle Fletcher, who I believe just received Wrestling Observer's Most Improved Wrestler, I think, award.
Correct.
So shout out to him. It was a solid match, and Kyle Fletcher was able to pick up the victory with a brainbuster on the top turnbuckle and was screaming basically that his win was a fluke, and I do the same to Ospreay in a week's time. So yeah, I thought it was a really solid collision, honestly, with some good moments in it. Those were the highlights for me, honestly.
Yeah, and it was like a good old Kyle Fletcher super over in the building. Match was exciting. The table spot was kind of crazy. Then when he hit him on the brainbuster on that turnbuckle, it was like, yeah, baby. And then he just won. It was just a great match because it was just a one-on-one match. No non-callous interference. Kyle Fletcher proved what he said. It was just a fluke.
Yes, he did. He absolutely did. So we'll move over now to AEW Dynamite from Austin, which opened up with the Best Wrestler Alive Open Challenge, which Platinum Max Caster made on Collision.
Again, I got to say, one of my favorite things is this challenge. It's just that silly wrestling irony thing where the guy's like, he's the best wrestler alive, but he just gets the crap beat out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. And he makes the open challenge, talking shit, and then Hangman shows up. But he wanted to make sure it was someone else to take the challenge, not Hangman. So as Hangman makes his entrance, Max hides in the crowd, hiding behind somebody's sign. Best part of the entire thing of him hiding in the crowd is just the image of everybody in the crowd pointing to exactly to where they were. Y'all got snitches in Texas. I'm just saying.
Yeah, Texas, they will snitch.
I'm like, come on, y'all. Like, you can't be snitching like that. At least make it a little bit difficult for Hangman to come and find him.
They
were just like, get your ass out of here. And he got the shit kicked out of him immediately. He at least hit a hurricanrana, which was about all that he got until he got just clotheslined and lariated to oblivion. And he is now 0-2, basically, in his open challenges. So it was a little fun, entertaining moment of just like, you know, hey, Max getting the shit kicked out of him to start.
Absolutely. He did his best to stay alive as a wrestler.
Just about.
There you go. That's all. Yeah, it's kind of changing the words around in his name. But yeah, no. Hangman was pissed. And I'm loving this Hangman right now.
Oh, yeah. He's the best Hangman that he is. Yeah. Ricochet cut a promo basically talking about how now everyone was giving him crap when he first came in, but now he's a winner in all the ways. Shouted out his Philadelphia Eagles who got the win. So he was gloating it up about how he was basically a winner in so many things. Didn't matter if you called me bald, if you threw these threats and insults. It doesn't matter when you can't win because Ricochet wins and keeps on winning. And he's just bragging and bragging and bragging. So nice little braggadocious moment for Ricochet. To which we move into the Trios Championship match. Holy shit, the belts actually exist. We get a title defense. The Death Riders, Pac, Wheeler Yuta, and Claudio Castagnoli defending their titles against the Undisputed Kingdom, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, and Roderick Strong. It was fun. I thought it was a fun match. I thought we got some really good moments in this. I thought Claudio and Pac were able to really showcase their abilities, which I enjoyed. It was nice to see the crowd really get behind Roderick Strong. I thought they were really into them. But you know, it was solid. You know, obviously it's just nice to see the fact that the belts were legitimately defended. They had not been defended since November. So it was nice to see them, used, but obviously with how little the belts have been defended, it was so clear that, you know, there's no chance the Death Riders were losing this match. So it was a solid match. It was entertaining. I liked honestly, Yuta getting the win. I thought that was dope. And then afterwards, you saw the Death Riders taking cheap shots, but then that's when 2.0, Daniel Garcia, Daddy Magic, and Cool Head Ange, they come and save the Undisputed Kingdom, maybe trying to set themselves up to try to get a shot at the titles as well. I personally would like to see Daniel Garcia do more with his TNT championship before he goes after a Trios title. That's personally me, but there's not many Trios that we can go with those belts, so it would still be fun to see them get a challenge at those belts because, you know, like I said, not that many challengers, but this was solid.
This was a really good match. Again, I think with pre-tape nature, we kind of knew. I didn't see the results, but I had a feeling if something big like a championship happened, it would probably make it through my filters. So I kind of went to the match knowing the result, even though I didn't look up anything. But it was good. We saw the six Trios titles defended. It was in a competitive match. Because of how it ended, I still think it built where Undisputed Kingdom could try to get another title shot out of it. And then we established another trio that's interested in the titles. And this is pretty much all, you know, it's wrestling, you know. Establishing challengers, getting them on TV, let's go.
Yeah, pretty much at this point. So we move on now to backstage promo with MJF, to which he calls out Dustin Rhodes, obviously, and says he's going to pray to the devil. Hangman immediately was just like, get the fuck out. Like, and MJF's like, I don't know what's going on, buddy. You got a crush on me? That's 4 weeks in a row you've interrupted me. So you're questioning yourself. You've lost your friends and your sanity because you want an apology. If anyone deserves apology around here, it's MJF because of the lack of respect that I'm getting. So he said, I'm going to beat Dustin Rhodes, and then I'm going to move one step closer to becoming a two-time AEW World Champion, as Hangman just kind of still stares him down. So, again, continuing to tease this little moment, too. We then follow this up with another Trios match between Samoa Joe, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata versus John Cruz. Aaron Solo, shout out. Been a minute since we've seen him.
And our boy Grillo.
Yes, Grillo.
What's up? Rosario, what's Grillo. Up? What up?
Yeah, so these guys make quick work of Cruz, Solo, and Grillo. And that's when Samoa Joe gets on mic and he goes, we come out here, the world asks me, what is this all about? And it's just simply violence, because what you see is three men who always have a problem and we always beat your ass to solve it. We will hunt you down in this ring and you will be caught. And it leads him to talk about Christian Cage and the patriarchy, because it could have been simple. You are hiding from the ops. And since I can't drag you out of your dressing room and you're too much of a chicken ass to show up, next week on Dynamite, it's the patriarchy against the ops. So we have a new trio in AEW, Samoa Joe, Katsuyori Shibata, and Hook. They are the ops.
Again, Hook automatically looks more awesome when standing next to these two men. Uh-huh. The ops is great. I gotta say, you know, I am going to be 99% positive on AEW today. But my 1%, where's my ops shirt?
Yeah, we need a t-shirt.
I mean, if you announce a name, it has to have a shirt on Pro Wrestling Tees that night.
Like, much.
And it's simple. It's those three faces, Mafia-style Godfather thing. Call them the ops. Let's move on. Boom. There you go. I think there's a lot of potential with the ops name to make shirts that even non-wrestling fans would wear. But, dude, we need a shirt. We need a shirt. You name a group, you need a shirt.
Pretty much.
I feel the same way about... did you see the Leo Rush and Action Andretti came up with a name, and it was like the Crew.
And I did not see that.
They're going to be called the Crew because they're cruel, they're ruthless, and something else. I forgot the words that they used, but it's called the Crew. Need that shirt out. You say the Crew, it kind of drops out there, and then I see a Leo Rush and an Action Andretti shirt individually. Why would I want to buy those shirts individually when they just had a team name? Let's go. Marketing.
Let's go.
Let's get these shirts out there. I'm trying to help y'all make money.
For real. For real.
So, yeah. Moving on from that, though, we have Renee Paquette interviewing Chris Jericho and Brian Keith, to which, obviously, Brian didn't get the job done against him. So, Chris Jericho was going to claim that bounty on Bandido. So, he challenged him to a showdown. He said, meet me in the center of the ring by yourself. So, obviously, this is something similar to what happened on Collision, right? When Bandido had...
When they did 10 faces with Brian Keith, and then they kicked each other in the face, and that was fucking awesome, and the crowd went crazy. And it's, the wrestling is can be silly and amazing at the same time.
Yeah, pretty much. So, Jericho wanted to get in on the fun with that, so we then had them face off in the center of the ring. Obviously, both were wearing their cowboy hats. And they go and take their steps as they get ready to draw. That's when Bandido then has Brian Keith, who gets under the ring, grabs Bandito's ankle, and that's when they start beating down on Bandido. The Outrunners come out. They even things up. Big Bill comes out. He gets the wanted poster, and he's looking to claim it. And that's when he's going to chokeslam Bandido, but Powerhouse Hobbs comes out. And they start slugging it out, and they start beating each other up. So, kind of getting this whole group of these people that have been feuding with each other and getting them all involved so they could start fighting with each other. So, yeah, that was...
More big, meaty men on my television. The yes. biggest and meatiest of the men, Will Hobbs, is on our TV. I told you to put him on your TV.
Yeah.
And this thing with Big Bill has kind of caught in fire, and they're going to have that match where they're just beating the shit out of each other. Dude, I'm thinking two-minute strike fest, bunch of slams. I kept just telling you. It's not very much I can know about wrestling, but how this should be presented is just nothing but big moves. Anybody tries to put on a headlock or anything like that, no. This match should last 5 minutes, nothing but big moves, and then one guy hits his big move last and wins it. And
honestly,
that's all it should be. Don't make this more difficult than it has to be. Work smarter, not harder.
Yeah, honestly, it's kind of all we got to do at this point, man.
Yeah, everybody has the layout in the mind of what they want to be. They don't want to see any drop kicks or side headlocks, dude. They want to see meat. Meat.
Just meat every single day.
Exactly. Goldberg, Brock Lesnar, WrestleMania 33, I believe, was in Orlando, and they just threw finishers the whole match. And then one guy hit more finishers than the other guy, and it was over. And I'm not saying do that exact thing. It's just that idea that you're big. You don't need a lot of moves because everything you do hurts.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it, man. That's honestly kind of it. So Marina Shafira and John Moxley are walking backstage, but that's when Cope gets Moxley in the back with a steel chair, and Jay White cuts off the briefcase with bolt cutters from Marina's wrist, and they steal the briefcase, which is said to have the AEW World title, and they just take off. Now, my only question was, how does Moxley not see that coming? Because when he rounded the corner, you should have seen Cope right there. So I don't know how he doesn't see him.
Yeah, Cope's a legit 6'4", 6'5". Yeah, I don't know how you miss that tall guy. But, yeah, that's still funny. And Cope and Switch are the comedy action duo that I never needed because Jay White still has the most punchable face ever.
Yeah, I mean, honestly.
Yeah. And I watched a podcast that said Jay White is miscast. And I'm like, the thing about wrestling, in my opinion, this is just my humble 30-year opinion, you can know the type of character someone is, right? But if you just present it that way for year after year and a year, sometimes people can get tired of that character, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to present it a little differently for a little while. So when that character goes back to what he previously was, it's like, oh, I forgot he was that good. It gives you a break from the character, you know? So
yeah.
I don't think Jay White played that swarmy heel, and he basically came from New Japan to AEW playing the same character. Eh, he's playing a little different character right now. Maybe it's a little out of place and you're not comfortable with it. But when he goes back to doing what he does, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, I kind of did need that break.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yes.
But we then had Dustin Rhodes do his little promo before his match where he said he was going to bring the devil and that he's here. You're going to find out why I'm the last of my kind. And that's when we get MJF versus Dustin Rhodes in their singles match. And this was solid. I thought this was a solid match. And honestly, I thought that the way they did this too, it just, there were so many teases. And I like how they just kind of just had them just beating each other down. So I thought this was really, really strong. And I think it's just because Dustin is just so easy to root for. Like, the babyface fire that he has is just absolutely strong. I think the way that he is able to just continue to get people to care. And, like, he's got such, like, this, I don't know what it is, man. It's just him saying he's the last of his kind and everyone just truly, like, respects him for that. How he never seems to waver. He's always here. And I love the ability of just MJF afterwards really just not letting go of the arm bar and just keeps beating him up and keeps holding it. Hangman came out afterwards to confront MJF. He got in his face and he kind of slowly got away, but that's when he turned back around and started beating up on Hangman. But that's when he gets to his feet. They separate Hangman and MJF, and that's when they start fighting through the crowd. That was exciting. And eventually Tony Khan said that they would have a face-to-face on Dynamite next week between MJF and Hangman. Here we go. Here we fucking go. This is where we were supposed to be, and not with MJF doing stuff with goddamn fucking
Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, this is where we were supposed to be. So getting Dustin to kind of be that person where MJF finally, I mean, Hangman actually comes to his rescue. I like that having Hangman coming to Dustin's rescue was a nice way to kind of get this to finally pop off. And yeah, I mean, dude, this right here, man, this is such a better use of MJF. And it's a good use of Hangman, too.
Yeah, and shout out to Jeff Jarrett. You know, you can tell he kind of got bumped in this character. And maybe they could come back to it later because he kind of still owes MJF one. But there was this thing. It was like Jeff Jarrett was, you know, basically at this point a comedy wrestler with the stuff he's done with his group over the last. He was loved, but he was a comedy wrestler.
Right.
Dustin's always been presented serious. He has two belts. He's a champion. He has nothing but solid matches. He's always presented himself as intense and gritty and all that stuff. And you know, you're doing the match in Texas. Everybody wants Dustin to win. Everybody wants Dustin to shut up MJF. There is emotion behind Dustin. So it was like, yeah, it's the same thing with a different person, and it worked. And then you brought in the Hangman, and they used it to transition the Hangman back to his natural baby face, because that's where he's obviously going. And he came out to save Dustin, like, because Dustin's the last outlaw, you know, and for all intents and purposes, the Hangman's an outlaw too. So it's like he came in to save the older version of himself from MJF. They had a hell of a brawl, like very big on the level of Dynamite feud intensifying brawls. It was amazing, and I was really pumped up, and I was like, this is the shit. This is that shit. This is that crack, that AEW crack that I love. Man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was smoking this right on up. Put this shit directly in my veins. Yeah, I loved it. Hangman is the star. Hangman is the lead character in AEW. As much as I might not be like, oh, he is my favorite wrestler, Hangman is the lead character. It's like
He's always been the one that's done character wrestling in AEW, like, consistently, like, yes, like, as one of the best, I feel like.
And if you're going to identify someone as the face of the AEW, No disrespect to Darby Allin, because I do want Darby to be world champion, because I fucking love Darby Allin.
Same.
But Hangman is the face of your company. He was the first singles guy, you know, the outside, you know, the elite. He was the star. He was the main event at All Out. I mean, he's the guy. Let's go with him.
Yeah. I'd still disagree just because I still think Darby's got that. But, you know, I get what you mean, man.
Hey, Darby wants to climb mountains. We make choices in life, sir.
Yes, I agree. Like I said, I agree. Which is why TK should make a choice to not, like, put him in a title picture when you know he's going to do that. So
yes.
That's just me.
Correct.
But we then had Swerve Strickland backstage with Prince Nana, to which Nana said Ricochet crossed the line, and he said basically Ricochet walking around trying to tarnish my legacy, to which Swerve said we're far from done. But then Nana was like, why do you have to make this so personal? Why do you have to hold on to this? Just focus on Moxley and getting the belt back that you, like, you worked so hard to get. To which Swerve's like, no, because Ricochet has the robe, because now I have to end this, and I will end this. So we're about to get another blood feud with Swerve, so we're about to be eaten out here.
Dude, this is what we do, and yeah, it's going to be something. It's going to be, it's Swerve, so it's going to be something disgusting that everybody's going to be talking to about on the internet for like the next 2 weeks.
Correct.
Yes, and while I am absolutely looking forward to that, it's like, I don't go to L.A. L.A. is on my no-fly zone. I don't go. Had a traumatic event there. But, man, the way they're stacking this card, it's like, man, I think I can get into L.A. And, like, this time, go see the show and then get out. Now, you know, I'm starting to convince myself. Me and JR started doing. Me and JR started doing a little, but I hate L.A. so much.
Hey, man. You can see my boy Jared out there if you go to L.A. That's a good thing about
that. Now, if that's a promise, I think that would be a solidified. Jared's going to the show with me. Yeah,
I'd have to ask him if he can make it to the show, but yes. I know if he does, I will let you know.
All right. So if Jared can make the show, I think I might have to actually make that happen. Yeah.
Sure. Well, moving on then, we had Megan Bain, recently All Elite Megan Bain. She had a matchup against Maya World, which is good. It was a nice little match. And then after her match, she had a little moment where Chris Statlander makes her entrance, and then she stares at Megan Bain, so little tease there. And that's when Chris Statlander had a match with Penelope Ford. But then that's when Megan Bain came down the aisle, and she was looking at Stat, but then Penelope Ford jumped her from behind, and that's when Statlander got hit with an F5 on the floor after she got her win over Penelope Ford. So a little bit of a moment right there. We have like this kind of mini feud right now between Megan Bain and Chris Statlander. I'll be interested to see how it goes and how Megan Bain is showcased in this and how Chris kind of works in this as well. But yeah, this little bit was all right. I thought it was a decent little moment in like a little kind of breaking moment. So, and obviously they made a big point to show before the match, Megan Bain knocking out Thunder Rosa on Collision. So, yeah, there should be some interesting feuds, I think, right here.
I got a small critique for Miss Megan Bain. She is perfection, Megasus. Everything about her is amazing. 10 out of 10 look. Okay. I feel like there's two ways to throw the F5, right? There, because the F5 is actually, you know, like a fireman's carry into a DDT, right? Mm-hmm. So you can do it the more direct way where it looks like you're throwing them straight into a DDT. Or you can do it the Brock Lesnar way, right?
Yes.
But you got to pick.
Like, throw them.
You got to pick one. So, like, so Megan Bain's like this powerhouse. So she got to get a little more height and throwing on her F5 to make it look like she's ragdolling the person as opposed to just doing a move. Or, again, the other way is to literally hold on to the person and make it look like you're doing literally a spinning DDT. It's just, to me, I've seen it twice now. I've seen her do it twice, and I was like, oh, so I'll do it on Thunder Rosa. Actually, I've seen her do it three times. The first match she had, then I saw her do it on Thunder Rosa, then I saw her do it on Chris Statlander, and I was like, yes, each time it looked less and less impressive. Even the one on the outside was cool because it was on the outside, but they've looked less and less impressive. So my small fan critique is watch some Brock, put some stank on it. Watch some Brock and put some stank on it. Okay? That's it. Just you just got to make it look like no one should ever get up. That was the first, that was to me, that was the thing with the F5 when I first saw Brock Lesnar do it. And he did it, I think the first person I saw him do it on was like Jeff Hardy. And it just looked like the way he tossed him, it was like, yes, no one should ever get up from this move ever. I like, and then when someone finally did, like years later, it was like hella impressive because it looked so nasty. And that's all I'm saying is just like, if you're going to do the F5, do the F5. Do it all the way. Borderline, look like you're about to hurt someone because that's what makes the F5 the F5.
Yeah, I completely understand that. So we then move on to a little interview with Will Nightingale, which was immediately interrupted by Rena Shafir jumping her, to which Moxley then called out Copeland for stealing the briefcase. Why you got to do Willow like that? I got to say, just straight up, like, why?
Hey, Willow and Marina have been kind of dancing around this for a few months. Marina done got pounced. Marina done got Willow once, and now it's like, okay. A nice non-title women's feud in AEW. I know a lot of women out there are very happy about this.
Should be a fun match, I will tell you that much, but I want Willow to absolutely pounce the fuck out of Marina again.
Heard, yes.
We then had my girl Harley, and like I said, I was gonna talk about this for sure. So, shows CEO's music playing, Mercedes' music is playing, and as the purple hair turns around, hi there, it's Puppet Mercedes, and she's chanting the CEO. Harley then starts rapping and doing her thing, and she's fucking killing it, as always, and, you know, use the puppet as, like, talking about it. Like, she says you're kind of new to this, and blah, 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 blah. And eventually she does some fast Eminem-type rapping, and eventually, though, she's like, you know what? Stop. And then it cuts away from her doing her little music video to her sitting down, chair turned around, and just staring down the barrel of the camera. And immediately as this happened, I'm like, let's fucking go. Let's come on. Because I love everything that Harley's been doing and her comedy stuff that she does and how she's able to be so entertaining and funny. But I was also just like, now it's time to show these people that you mean fucking business. That, no, I'm not just some flash in the pan. No, I'm not just some like little haha. Look at the girl that is like super hot and can do funny things and sing and do all this type of stuff. No, she's a fucking professional wrestler and she's good at this. So when she started doing this serious promo, I was immediately engaged. And she talks about how Mercedes is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. You had to start somewhere too, because it was not long ago where I thought there was a time, obviously, I didn't know how to wrestle at all. I didn't know how to play guitar. I didn't know how to sing. I didn't know how to rap, speak Chinese. She literally does that. She said, I guess you can say I'm a quick learner. No fucking shit. And she thanked Mercedes for all the times that she called her a loser because it pushed her to work harder. Thanks to her, Harley Cameron is going to win the TBS championship in her home country of Australia. Feel the wrath. Dude, fucking star. Star, 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 star. I've been saying it for months, almost years, about how much I think she has just grown and blossomed. And, like, it's huge. Like, I'm seeing on social media people being like, I'm convinced Harley needs to win. Like, that's the shift that we're seeing here. Like, we are seeing a star in the women's division being made, and it's the girl from the QTV segments. Put that in perspective. A few years ago, that's what Harley Cameron was doing, and now she's one of the biggest female stars in the company right now. And she's feuding with Mercedes fucking Moné. Like, I'm so happy for her. I'm so happy to see Harley in this position. I'm so happy that she's now being treated as a serious threat. I love the fact that she's showing that basically, hey, I am multifaceted, I am multi-talented, and yes, even though I've only been wrestling for a short amount of time, I'm also still good at this too. And I love it. She's so lovable as a babyface, but I also know too that if they ever wanted to turn her heel, because I mean, she's just effortlessly perfect at everything she does, that it could bother you, so she could be a good heel as well. And she's shown that she can do heel stuff too in the past in AEW. Man, dude, whenever you vouch for people and they show what they can do and they reach expectations, dude, like, it makes you feel like so proud. Like, I love seeing the people that I support win, and seeing Harley in this position makes me so happy. I am absolutely on pins and needles to see the reaction she gets in Australia, because I think that she's going to fucking blow the roof off the building. And I mean, we'll talk about this match when we get to our predictions, but I'm just so happy, man. It's so good to see Harley in this spot right now. And I love it.
I think Harley is as an example of the ability to work up the card in AEW. She has made so many moments memorable, moments count, whatever they put her in. You remember what she does. She has shown all her talent. And, you know, and it got to the point where AEW has realized how to use said talent to market her and show her in her best light. And they've done that. So it's like, when the coaching meets the performance, it's like, this is what you have is with Harley, and they understand, you know, how she should, the perfect way to present her. So even if she wins, loses, whatever on that day, you know what? She's always going to make her spot count no matter where she is on the card.
No fucking question. Absolutely. We then had the AEW Tag Team Championships being defended by the Hurt Syndicate, taking on the new returned Guns. So, this was good. I thought this was good. This nice was little strong defense from Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin.
Solid defense. They just won. They were just a better team. The Guns can, it's the Guns, really, their first match back was a title shot. So, now they can be like, okay, you got us. Now you can put the Guns in some kind of other feud, keep them on TV, keep them mattering, and maybe build up to a second defense down the line. But yeah, I just like, you brought the Guns back, and they were over, and they were dude, over.
Both, it was so great to see both of them like so popular. Yeah. Like, it was so good to see like how both teams were getting Guns Up chants, and we Hurt People chants, dude. It was just nice to see the level of support that both teams got.
Yeah, and that was it. It was a face-versus-face tag team match, and the one faces. And I feel like the Hurt Syndicate is supposed to be like heels, but they don't do anything heelish. They don't cheat. You know?
They're just dominant, and they're just badass.
And they just win. So this is actually how you can present a baby face. It's just like...
Honestly.
They had a great match. I've always said Austin is one of the best sellers in wrestling. I think Colton's got the great physical look. He just has, you know, as far as the charisma and stuff, he has a little bit further to go than Austin, but man, he's a big old boy. So they both did well, but you know, they hurt people. I want the yellow shirt, but it's a Dynamite exclusive. So it wasn't that Collision. My heart broke. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I want the yellow shirt.
Yeah.
I kind of want to, there's going to be many shirts before July, but I was like, dude, it'd be so cool if like the whole, like my group and the whole section we're with, everybody wears a Hurt Syndicate shirt, because man, they've shown you that it's like, AEW is not the only place that some talent has to sit at home, even though they're good. Because Shelton Benjamin wasn't getting used. Bobby Lashley wasn't getting used. They come to AEW where, hey, we got this spot for you, and they have done nothing but kill it. Nothing but kill it. And they seem like they're fairly easy to work with. So, when that happens, whenever it happens, as far as You know, if another member comes, yeah, come on. This has been a very successful act.
It has been. And it's been really fun to see. It's been really, really fun to see. we then move on to the closing moments of the show. First, we have, obviously, Cope with a little promo backstage. It's still holding the briefcase because he's running around. Mox is running around throwing tantrums because you don't have the weapon that keeps the sycophants under your thumb. He's like, you want this back? Meet us in the ring at the end of the night. Mariah May then had a quick little promo too, basically towards Toni Storm, finally saying, you never did know how to write an ending, did you? Because you don't know when to stop, because beating you in Australia is not the worst thing I can do, because you're nothing without me. And she said, Toni Storm isn't real, and this stops now, because this is going to be a mercy killing. This, and that's the last bit she has to say in that promo. And then we close out the show. Excuse me. We close out the show with Cope and Jay White coming out to the ring with Mox's briefcase. And Copeland says, basically, world title has been hidden inside this briefcase for far too long. The crowd's like, he's like, you guys want to see it? You want to finally see this belt? So he's like, I got an idea. He goes out from under the ring. He gets Spike, and he brings out Spike. And he's like, I'm going to, Spike is a bit hungry right now, and she wants to dig her teeth into that briefcase. And Mox, if you don't accept my challenge for the world title at Revolution, I'm going to smash this briefcase open and take the title. So get out here and give me your answer. And Mox runs out from the crowd, says, you have no idea what mistake you're making. You think I don't care? You think that I don't care about this belt? You don't know jack about anything. He's like, these people don't know jack because I've left pieces of my soul in that ring for the title. I am its protector. And at Revolution, I'm going to break Adam Copeland's neck. You want a shot at the king? You got it. To which Mark Copeland goes, basically, all right, well then, that's, I appreciate you giving me that, but I'm going to still show the world what I think of this. And he takes Spike, he slams the Spike with the briefcase and hammers away at it. Death Riders come out and start beating up on Jay White and Cope. Marina Shafir quickly gets the briefcase and pulls it out, but that's when Jay White hits the Blade Runner on Claudio. Copeland spears Moxley. Jay White then says, you got Revolution, but before you get there at Grand Slam Australia, we put the Death Riders in the ground. That closes out the show. I mean, it was okay, I will say. Obviously, it keeps this storyline going and gets the excitement for the tag match at Grand Slam, and it gets the match for Copeland at Revolution at, against Moxley. And yeah, I think it's all right. It set up the match, but like, I don't know. The image of him slamming Spike with on the briefcase to me, I think it's emblematic still of just how I don't like what the world title is being used for. That's why I still don't like the Death Riders. Cause I just feel like, you know, that this is what the world title is being used for, is that it's hidden away in a briefcase that's getting beat up by Copeland with a bat full of spikes. I just, like, I don't know. It could still be fun. We'll see how it goes. Obviously, Jay White being involved, I'm wondering if maybe he turns on Adam Copeland at some point. But it's tough because, obviously, Swerve versus Ricochet, Hangman Page versus MJF, both of those feuds feel like they could be for the world title, and that this is what we have for the world title feud. It just feels lacking, and that's kind of just where my feelings lie, where it's just like everything surrounding the Death Riders, it just struggles to make me care, and the fact that it's the feud that is holding the world championship hostage, in my view, it just frustrates me because there are so many good feuds in AEW. Like, ironically, some of the most – this is probably the most feuds they've had at one time that are, like, simultaneously over in a while, and the world title feud is not one of those. So, that's just kind of where I'm at.
Well, I will tell you, I've been saying about the Death Riders. A Death Riders is a roller coaster we got to ride. Mm-hmm. I have just said, basically do it in more desirable chunks. And I think over the last few weeks, that's what they've done. I am not a fan of the Death Riders, But how they did it at the beginning, had a little segment at the middle, had a little segment at the end. There is story progression on the Death Riders. It's moving forward. And they're doing it in smaller bites. And it actually means something. So these are the things that have made it more tolerable. They made something I don't like more tolerable, but that's the best I can do. I can't come on here and be like, oh, the Death Riders are good now. It's not good. It's just, it is right now. It's not good.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea is if you're trying to make 200 mocks, the Death Riders should be growing. If that is your ultimate mission and goal, is to make 200 versions of mocks, which is what he announced. Shouldn't your group be growing? We're at, 5 months with the title? And there's been nothing, no growth, no anything? How is your message getting through? Again, there's a lot of questions I have on this. I could go on forever. But what I think AEW has done over the next few weeks is taken it and presented it in nice little, hey, chunks. It's like the broccoli at the end of your meal. Like, we got a good show. We got the good main event. Then it's like, okay, you got to eat your broccoli now. And we ate that, and it's good, and it was fine. And I think they've made it tolerable. They've put a little cheese on the broccoli. But, you know, it's still broccoli in the end. That's where we're at. So I hope to get past this. But like I said, I feel like over the last few weeks during this hot period of TV shows, they have presented the Death Riders in a more tolerable way.
It has been more tolerable. I will give you that. It's still not what
I
prefer.
It's not good. I started it with that. It's still not
correct.
Good.
No, you're right.
It's still not good. It's just, it's better. It was
basically
like,
where we're at, yeah.
It's like, I'm not thinking of turning the channel now. I can last, but no. So we'll see. I mean, hopefully, again, I've said this at Revolution. I said it at whatever the New Japan Dynasty was. We had the opening show. I've just been hoping there's some progression on this Death Riders storyline. Maybe we get a progression moment at Revolution. I don't think it's going to happen at Grand Slam. I'm willing to skip that. But hopefully we get a full progression moment at Grand Slam.
Yeah, hopefully so, honestly. That is AEW Dynamite from this week, and now we will go ahead and we will preview Grand Slam Australia. I guess we can give our predictions on it too, and just do that.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Preview prediction. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Let's get into it. So, this is what we got for AEW Grand Slam. First up, do you want to touch on the Ring of Honor matches that we're gonna have for it? Actually. Because they are showing the Ring of Honor Global Wars matches, too, if you want to touch on those.
Yeah. Oh, no, I accidentally pressed mute and was talking. Yes, let's go ahead and do that.
Yeah, we'll quickly touch on the Global Wars matches. We're going to have the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles defended by Dustin Rhodes and Sammy Guevara versus M&M Collection. M&M Collection should win. 1,000% M&M Collection should win. Put the belts on them. They stole them. Now actually have them hold them.
Yeah, I could go with that. It's one of those things like if at this point in time, I think that Sons of Texas ends with Sammy turning. So I don't think this is the match that it happens at. So I think there's more establishing before Sammy turns on Dustin. So I don't think it's this time, but if they did it, it wouldn't upset me.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised about that. We then have Athena defending her Ring of Honor Women's Championship against Alex Windsor. Obviously, I would love to see the point where Athena finally loses the belt. I don't know if Windsor is going to be the one to do it, though. I just don't know.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think this is just another... a victim on Athena's World Tour, the Forever Championship. Again, let's just say, you know, I am someone that has watched a lot of the Converse, and I think maybe the second best thing Tony Khan has done as a wrestling promoter is this Athena streak. And I would be ashamed if he wasted it. And as much as I like Alex Winder, and I think she should be signed to AEW, you know, that's not the person you want to give the streak to.
Pretty much, yeah. I would say the same thing. Trios match between Chris Jericho, the Ring of Honor world champion, Big Bill, and Brian Keith versus Bandido and the Outrunners. I think this is the get back moment for Jericho and Big Bill and them. I think the Learning Tree is going to get their get back. Even though I love Bandido and the Outrunners, I think they're getting their get back.
Yeah, and it's the perfect place to do it in Australia. I don't know how the 80s throwback gimmick gets over there. Maybe they're not as over there. But Chris Jericho is super over there. So if you're taking your wrestling program to a different continent that might not know a lot about wrestling, guess who they do know? Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho gets the pin.
There you go. And then we have the Pure Championship being defended by Lee Moriarty against Robbie Eagles. I think Lee probably wins this still.
Yeah, they're doing the thing. Lee Moriarty is the best pure wrestling champion of all time, so you can't have him lose. It would be a nice feel-good moment for the Australian Robbie Eagles, and you could honestly, you know, put the title right back on Moriarty like next month. But, yeah, I still think Moriarty is going to win.
There you go. Now to the Grand Slam portion of the show. The Continental Championship will be defended by Kazuchika Okada to Buddy Matthews. This should be a fucking banger. Absolute fucking slap of a match. I do think Okada still walks away with the title.
Yeah.
But, man, this should be a good match.
Yeah, I got Okada at, like, negative 2,000 if we're doing the gambling thing.
Yeah, the odds are yes. Not... There's no value in betting Okada.
But Okada's a great, great long-term wrestler. So I truly believe that you have a lot of false finishes. Like, he hits all his good shit, and when Okada kicks out, shit, honestly, for the hometown crowd, you might even do a draw.
Yeah, but honestly.
But no, I think Okada should win with, like, 10 seconds left or some shit.
All right. We then have the TBS Championship, Mercedes Moné defending her title against Australia's own Harley Cameron. I want to hear your thoughts. What do you think? What's your prediction for this?
Okay. Again, false finishes. Harley, Harley almost getting the three. In the end, Mercedes has to cheat to win. And, you know, you have that disappointing moment. Mercedes just wins. But really? She basically, Harley gets so close, she gets respect, and the moment ends with Mercedes hugging and handshaking Harley.
Gotcha.
You know, like respect you moment.
I see what you're saying there, yeah. You'd be surprised, but I actually do agree with you. I love Harley. I think she is so damn over right now. And obviously, I've seen the movement on social media. People have now just decided, you know what? Honestly, Harley's finally won me over. She should win against Mercedes. I get that instinct. I get that. But the statements that Mercedes made are still true. She is still new. This is still early. It's too early, I feel like. I think it's a cool little moment that we saw Harley like get serious for the first time. She needs to be knocked down and there needs to be more of a journey. I think Mercedes presents an interesting mountain for her to climb. And I understand the instinct of wanting to do it immediately. My worry is that you do that with Harley and then you don't really have a plan with her being the champion itself. And then we're kind of just left in a position where we're kind of like, you're in a Daniel Garcia spot where like Danny's great. It's cool that he's the champion. What's he doing? You know what I mean? Like what's his role as champion? Like who's coming after him? What's he doing as a champion? You know what I mean? I want Harley to hold the championship with meaning and I want there to be substantial amounts of planning behind it, and I don't want it to be a hot shot like, hey, here's a cool little moment, and then it's just completely forgotten about. I want, when Harley's a champion, she needs to be like the face of the women's division. That's my feeling. I love her. I think she's amazing. not yet. Make it, make people want it. Make people like just so desperate to have it. Like, please give me Harley Cameron as champion. Then you do it. Like, you get them, like, you got to make sure you make them want it. Like, it's wrestling, guys. We can't just hotshot this. We got to make people want it. So.
It's TV. You know, you got some episodes written. Somebody gets popular in an episode. You don't burn all the episodes and then make new episodes. No, you stick with the episodes you want and try to feature them a little bit more. So, in the episodic television, like, it's Harley wins. But, you know, once Harley wins, that's kind of the end of her story. You know what I mean? Because you haven't given her enough roots. So it would be a great win in Australia, but I think there's another moment for that. So
I agree. No, yeah. Again, I absolutely agree, and I think that she will get there. I 1,000% think she will get there. But I have enough confidence in her that she will be so undeniable that eventually when the time does come, it will feel so good to see. Like, I might have a tear in my eye when she finally wins it. But not yet. Brisbane Brawl between the Death Riders and Cope and Jay White. I honestly think maybe they go with Cope and Jay White just because it might give a little bit of excitement for Cope towards Revolution, where Moxley will beat Copeland for the world title. Maybe they kind of do this as like giving them a little bit of a heads up on the Death Riders, just for Cope to get the revenge win at Revolution. But then also, too, I'm thinking maybe Jay White screws Cope here. Fucking, I'm going to go with the baby faces. I don't like the Death Riders. I'm going with Cope and Jay White.
In this case, because of the group, I think you do go with Cope pinning Mox, because that gives you more excitement going into Revolution that Cope might beat Mox.
There we go. I agree with that 1,000%. The AEW Women's World Championship, Mariah May versus Timeless Toni Storm. Now, this is the moment where the story concludes. Yeah. Toni Storm crowned world champion.
Last match,
revenge on Mariah.
Last match in Australia. All the fans going, Toni, 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 Toni.
This has to be the main event.
She hits the move. Your winner and five-time AEW Women's Champion, Timeless Toni Storm. Let's fucking go. Now, hot take. I think if your goal is long-term getting someone over, making a star, Mariah May wins this match.
I see that.
She needs it more than Toni Storm, and beating her in Toni Storm comes off all this comeback, and then she beats her in her hometown. Mariah May is a made woman. She is a name in AEW. Hell, basically fast track her to the Hall of Fame. Toni Storm wins. She gets her revenge. 5-time champion. It almost feels like it's almost like a conclusion to the story. It's not. Because you still got the rubber match that you can do, like a Texas, you know, death match, whatever match you want to do with it if you want to. But I'm saying to make the biggest statement AEW can make that they're Mariah May is for her to get this win.
I agree with you, but the only reason I would agree with you with that is if there were other women behind Toni Storm that were set up to be able to be, you know, champion level for somebody to challenge Mariah. Like, I just don't feel like there's enough right now. Obviously, Britt, I think, is, but she's not being presented that way. Jamie Hayter, I think, will get there. I think she's still trying to make up a little bit for lost time.
They haven't decided what the vendetta is yet.
Yes, because, they have not.
Because they've given them the cool entrance, the cool look, but they lose.
Yes,
look at the Hurt Syndicate. You got to win. You know, you win.
Yeah, Chris Statlander, I think, is probably the closest. But right now, she's in the middle of something with, obviously, she's going to be doing stuff with Megan Bain.
Yeah.
And then who else do you have?
Yeah.
I mean, you have Thunder Rosa. I love Thunder Rosa, but I just feel like she's kind of just there as a legacy act at this point, which is a shame because I think she's amazing. Willow, I think, would be the closest, but I think she's gotten chances, though, before, has she not?
Yeah, and it looks like she's about to start that thing with Shafir.
Correct. So, yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing, though, is, like, I understand that mindset. There's nowhere for Mariah to go as champion if she wins. She's just stuck as champion.
Yeah.
And it leaves that belt kind of held hostage a little bit. So as much as I agree with you, I think Mariah's already a made star, personally, and I think she's done the best work of her career right now, and I think she's been one of the best women's champions we've had in a very long time.
But
so
I do think there's an obvious answer after Tony. If Tony doesn't win,
what would that be?
Athena.
I agree, but I just don't think they're putting Athena up.
Because that's the whole thing with Athena. This is this loaded gun you have in your pocket that you can pull out and fire, and it hit 100%. The moment Athena comes on Dynamite, she's going to be over because the stories and the rumors and everything, the legend of Athena is built. So
I agree, but the problem is she's a heel.
Yeah.
And her going up against Mariah or May, it's heel versus heel, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I understand where your mindset's at, and I want her up on the main roster as soon as humanly possible, but
I am of agreement Tony Storm's going to win.
It's got to be Tony. Like,
but my hot take is that if the wagon is behind, if Mariah May wins the match.
I get you. No, I get you there. But it's Tony. It's Tony. It's Tony. It's Tony. And this should main event. But just to close things out, though, the tag match between Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega versus Konosuke Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher.
Yes, and this should main event by... Who the fuck wants to try to go after these four?
I understand. But I'm
setting the bar at 5.5 stars. I'm like, 5.5 stars is where I expect it to be. I could see it going above it. I don't see it going below it.
Yeah, I get you there.
Dude, I mean, you're setting up to me for a Takeshita Omega match for the international title. So I think it's the epic match, and then Omega pins Takeshita. Okay. That way you have Omega and Takeshita at Revolution.
Okay. There you go. So Omega pins Takeshita. Yeah, I feel like the baby faces are going to win just to give the crowd like the closing moment, you know what I mean? So I'll go Ospreay and Kenny, but man, what would it be like if Konosuke and Fletcher win this?
Well, if
man.
Fletcher wins it, you know, it'll probably just sound like the good guys won because he's fucking Australian. And
correct.
Yes, but if, yeah, so I think it's either got to be Fletcher getting the pin, or Fletcher getting the pin on Kenny, or Kenny getting the pin on Takeshita. That's kind of how I see it.
There you go. And that is our preview, though, for Grand Slam Australia. And then I believe we'll go ahead and real quick, the only things we have announced for Dynamite next week is obviously we're getting the face-to-face with MJF and Hangman, and then the Ops will have a trios match against the Patriarchy, and that's what we have coming up next week in Phoenix.
Young person, what do you think of the name Ops?
I like it, personally. Okay. I actually like it. It fits because Hook is younger generation. It makes sense for him to be in a team called that. And then Joe is obviously a killer, and Shibata is a killer. It's easy. I feel like you said, you can do some cool mob-style merch with it and stuff like that. I dig it, honestly. I think it's solid. And also, I saw somebody make a post about this, too, because obviously Samoa Joe comes out with a towel. And Shibata comes out with a towel. Hook doesn't come out with a towel around his neck. And people were talking about the idea of having Hook kind of working his way up to being able to earn a towel.
Yes, because I think
would be dope.
Because I don't know if they took it to this other level. Guess who used to come out with a towel to every match? Taz.
Yes.
It has to be Taz's towel that Taz hands.
Correct. Taz, he needs to give it to him too.
Taz has to give Hook the orange towel. Like, here you go, because you know tough guys got the towels. There you go. I love it.
Yeah, there you go. And I think that's all we have right now. But there's only one little bit we have to mention. Obviously, I said about Kyle Fletcher winning Wrestling Observer's Most Improved Wrestler. What other, we can go ahead and touch the other AEW winners from those awards.
Takeshita won Most Underrated. Real Ospreay won Outstanding Wrestler. Tony Khan finished second in Book of the Year to Triple H. Will Ospreay also won High Flyer of the Year. I believe Commander was second in that one. Let's see who else won. I had my little list here, and then I kind of went away. Let's see. Come on, Floyd. Yes. Now it's like when you don't need it. But Ospreay versus Danielson at Wrestle Dynasty, or what was it called? AEW Dynasty, which is AEW Dynasty. And they won. They won that one, match of the year. And I think Excalibur won a caller commentary or best on announcing again, but I have to get there. I have to get back to the link that I was at.
For sure.
But, yeah. So, in general, those were the winners. Let's see. Okay, here we go. Young Bucks won Tag Team of the Year. Dynamite. Yeah. Dynamite Best Weekly TV Show. Darby Allin, Best Non-Heavyweight Wrestler. Let's see. What's improved? Bruiser Brody, Best Brawler, Hangman. Most Underrated. I already said that one. Oh, Nigel McGuinness won Best Television Announcer.
Shout out. And Best Magician.
Best Major Show, AEW Revolution. An award we didn't want to win, Worst Television Show, AEW Rampage.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. Best Wrestling Maneuver, Will Ospreay's Hidden Blade. Worst Feud of the Year, MJF versus Adam Cole. Let's see. Best Gimmick, Tony Storm. Worst Gimmick, The Learning Tree.
There you go.
And there you go. Yeah, we killed it.
Woo!
Yes. Yeah. Tony Storm, not Women's Wrestler of the Year.
That's
kinda
a crime.
That's kind of weird. But Shout out to Cerise. She did have a good year.
She did.
Yeah. There you go.
So that, though, I think we'll close it out for this episode of All Things Elite. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Go ahead.
One thing we missed.
All right.
Huge thing that should have led the show. The AEW releases.
Yes, that is true. Yes, because I did forget that.
Yes.
We did talk. I feel like it's pretty quick to talk about, though, because they kind of listened to what we said. You know, these guys that are just kind of sitting at home doing nothing,
Just
let them go.
And listen to the show. You heard me say they should just release them on a random Monday. And they released them on a random Monday. Ricky Starks showing you people. You know what? Not going to say it. Rick Starks showed up the next day on NXT with no name.
Said yeah, no name.
Absolute most generic promo I've ever heard in my life. he's there.
Crowd pop.
The crowd popped. So shout out to Rick Starks. Best of wishes on your future endeavors. Miro and Malakai Black. Malakai Black did not get released. His contract just expired.
It expired.
The only Miro and Ricky Starks have both asked for release and were left out of their contract.
The only one that we're still waiting on is at this point is Phoenix.
Yes, and Phoenix, he made the mistake of saying something bad about Tony Khan on Twitter.
Yes, now TK is just like, remember what you just said?
No, you're going to sit there. I'm going to release everybody but you, okay? Sit there. I feel him on that one. Yes. And there was another piece of unfortunate news about Bear Bronson, I believe.
Yeah. Ugh.
I got to make sure it was the right Bear because I get them confused. So, no, Bear Boulder. It was Bear Boulder was arrested for a domestic dispute with his wife. If you want to go Google the report, understand this is a trigger warning because I was told that basically if I still wanted to like people not to read it, so I didn't. So apparently it's very nasty, and he was immediately released from AEW. I don't want to pretend like we don't report that kind of stuff because we do. That happened. He's gone. I'm glad he's gone.
Yes.
So, yeah, never, you know, never need to hear about him again, ever. But, you know, that happened. So, but yes, AEW did have some releases. I think it is addition by subtraction. Not that any of these people were bad people. I don't know them personally. I don't know how tough they were to work with as far as this is Miro, Malakai, and Ricky. They just didn't want to be there anymore. And at some point, you don't want that, like, AEW fan-friendly, wrestler-friendly company. You don't want that stigma that, you know, you hold wrestlers hostage. So I do think, as far as morale, a PR, everything, this was the right play for AEW to let them go. Still, Rey Fénix, sit your ass down. That's where I am. I'm like, sit your ass down. You're like, I understand. You might, you know, the whole inhumane comment, it's like, I don't know. From what I know, AEW wrestlers seem to be treated really, really, really well. And, you know, their privacy's upkept and all that kind of stuff. So he might have meant it a different way. I don't know. But don't piss off Tony Khan. It's just that simple. Just don't do it. But, now that's all we have.
We definitely should have led with that, but you know late and we're doing this on a Friday instead of Thursday, so we're a little out of whack. So.
Yes. I am probably still a little bit high. So
there you go.
So I'm gonna go back to bed after this. But
as will I. I've got a busy day tomorrow. So
yes,
guys. Again, thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you're downloading the show on YouTube Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to us on. We appreciate it. Share us around with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish. Rate, review, subscribe, and follow us on Twitter and Blue Sky and social media. We are at AT Elite Pod. Search us up that way. You'll find us on all those platforms. At Social Suplex, make this show possible and have incredible other podcasts you should check out and listen to and support. We love those guys. We appreciate them. I am at Austin Sumowicz, SZUMOWICZ. Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter, and I will let him go ahead and take us home on this episode of All Things Elite.
Yes. Hey, I'm going to leave it as simple. Little things in life, little treats, trinkets, whatever, can make people feel special and then let people know that you're thinking about them. And if you have the ability to do it, I'm not saying going broke or going poor, but if you have the ability to do something small, maybe a Starbucks gift card or something like that, it's just enough to make your friend know that you might not tell them, friends know that you might not tell them how much you love them, but you can kind of show them and all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't have to be friends. It could be family members, you know, your significant other, whatever. Just try to do the little things in life to let people know that you love them, because if you do that, then Valentine's Day is really just another day. So with that, I'll leave you how I know, I always leave you, whether it's home, work, or school, always do your best to be elite.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient. Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.